This podcast is part of the Democracy Group.
Welcome to the April 2024 episode of RCB Clips, our podcast about all things ranked choice voting. I'm Kelly, a member of the Resource Center staff, and in today's episode, I'll be talking with our policy team, Chris and Ryan, about our RCV Maps project. But first, a quick announcement. We are so excited to announce that RCV Clips has joined the Democracy Group, a network of podcasts and organizations that create educational content about democracy, civic engagement, and civil discourse. You can learn more about the Democracy Group at democracygroup.org, and be sure to check out some of their other important and informative podcasts. Now, back to the episode. Chris and Ryan, welcome. So glad to have y'all on today.
Excited to be here.
Yeah, glad to be back. Two times in a row now.
I know. And you know, Chris, usually you're sitting in the host seat alongside me. So we're glad to have you as a guest today to talk about this really amazing project that we have. Some folks may be already familiar with it, but we have some new things to share. So excited to talk about that. Before we get started, you know how I like to ask a little question to loosen things up and get everybody ready to go. The question of today is, if you were to give a TED Talk, what topic would you give your TED Talk on? And it cannot be RCV related.
Okay, so in my personal time, one of the things I like to do is I'm a big NASCAR fan. And so one of the things I would give a TED Talk on is how NASCAR is a sport and all the intricacies into it. Because that's one of the things, the myths about is that some people just joke they're driving around in circles, but there's a lot more to it than that. So I think that's probably what I would give my TED Talk on.
I could not have scripted that better, because when I thought about this question, I thought Ryan's going to say NASCAR. So Chris, what's yours?
I have a bunch of things. I'm trying to think of the one that like our audience will find most interesting. I'm going to say, I think like a history of Nintendo and the way they started as like a trading card company in the late 1800s and sort of like became this like video game company in the 80s and all the sort of trials and tribulations along the way.
I absolutely love that. And I know a few of us talked about this the other day. So Ryan, I'm sorry, we had a little bit of time to think about it, but I have a new TED Talk that I thought of today. And because we've been talking a lot about Beyonce's new record in The Office. So my TED Talk would be on covers of songs and the quality of those covers. So because we talked a lot about Jolene and Blackbird today that Beyonce covered. So it could be a little fun exercise for our podcast group to do some fun TED Talks. Let's really get down to business now. I know our listeners are really here to hear about some in the weeds ranked choice voting stuff. So tell us, what exactly is RCB Maps and how did this idea originate?
So in a sentence, RCV Maps is the Resource Center's flagship project where we try to sort of introduce anybody who's interested to ranked choice voting administration and implementation with a focus on voting systems. And I'll let Ryan talk a bit more about all of that. But the reason we made it is we sort of kept getting, when we were talking to election administrators, when we were talking to ranked choice voting advocates, when we were talking to policymakers interested in RCV, we kept getting sort of this same set of questions about ballots, about results reporting, about voting systems and what they can do for ranked choice voting. And so we realized that I think it'd be helpful, you know, all of our work is about answering the questions that come up again and again in ranked choice voting implementations, but we wanted to have a sort of like good, quick reference document for people to go to answer a lot of those questions that come up again and again. And so that's why we made RCV Maps. And we first started doing it, and we started working on it in 2020. The first edition came out in 2021. And, you know, we've been continuing to update it and improve it since then.
Yeah. And so the acronym itself, RCV Maps, comes from the Multi-State Assessment Project. We kind of designed it as a one-stop shop for everything someone might want to know about their state. If they're interested in exploring RCV, they could be advocates, lawmakers, election administrators, people who are just interested in learning more. Through this project, we look at all 50 states plus DC, and we review their voting equipment and their RCV capabilities, as well as some of the general election administration practices within the state.
So it's interesting you say that, because, you know, it does cover all 50 states. And I was talking with organization the other day that we're doing a presentation on a panel with in June with the League of Women Voters at their biennial celebration. And one of them said, oh, well, why don't you just print out all the RCV maps? And I said, well, it's not a single report particularly. And if we put it all together in one, it's probably what, about 300 or 400 pages?
Closer to 800 pages, maybe 900.
Oh, closer to 800 or 900. So I don't think we'll be printing that out. It would have to be a triple, you know, a bound set of novels for us to have that at the actual conference.
And to anyone who may be panicking hearing 800 or 900 pages, you don't need to read all 800 or 900 pages. There's a report for your state. Read the report for your state. It'll be 30 pages. And like most of it is like quick hit information.
Absolutely. Yeah, I didn't even think about scaring away our prospective users. So please read your state's RCV Maps report. So the newest RCV Maps revision, because this actually originally came out back in 21 with the original project. Last year in 23, we did a new version of RCV Maps. It came out toward the end of last year. Tell us a little bit about the process of moving from the old version to the new version.
The reason we wanted to have this podcast is because we launched this new version at the end of last year, but it was in the middle of all the elections at the end of the year. And we knew it would sort of get buried. So we wanted to wait until the spring to like really sort of like throw it out in front of people and be like, hey, come look at this new version of RCV Maps, the 2023 edition of RCV Maps. So we're just excited to have that out in the world and be talking to people about it. But what we were doing was, this is the second version of RCV Maps. We're taking what we made in 2021, the first edition, and trying to improve upon it. So what we're doing is, you know, in the 2 years that RCV Maps, now 3 years that RCV Maps has been out, we've gotten some questions, some confusion from the original version. And we realized like, oh, here are places where we can improve the report, where we can make it clearer for readers, where we can maybe sort of simplify some of the analysis. So that's what we were trying to do with this new version, is just sort of, I think in some ways, streamline the report while also making it more like robust and useful for people. And the other thing too is, you know, we want to release it every 2 years because voting systems and election administration and ranked choice voting in particular change, you know, every year. It's not a revolution every couple of years, but it is always an evolution. So we want this report to sort of stay up to date and stay relevant for people who are working on ranked choice voting. So that's why we aimed for the 2023 release. We'll talk about this a bit more later. We're also going to, you know, release a 2025 edition next year. But for now, right, that's how we're scheduling the reports and why we're scheduling them in the way we are.
Yeah, and for some of the process, definitely a little bit easier in some ways, harder in other ways for a second time around. I wasn't with the organization for the first time around, so I was able to provide hopefully a fresh set of eyes for some things. But with any project, we start by identifying the scope of work and determining what it is we need to either update a template wise, or what is a new template we needed to make, because we are doing 51 of these assessments. And so we start divvying up the work between the two of us. And then we also had Melissa on our team who did an amazing job helping us write these. So we start going through and expanding on our templates, either updating based on feedback we've gotten. And then we keep editing and writing and editing and writing until we're happy with it, because we know we're going to be using these 51 times. We want to make sure we get it right. And then we start to dive into the research on each state. So we divided it up three different ways. And then each of us would dive into the research on a particular state. And then we would break it into chunks. And then we would kind of go through an internal feedback process where we would be reviewing all of the research and writing that one of us has done with a fresh set of eyes, and then be sharing it both with the writers of the RCV maps as well as the whole team to get feedback, catch, you know, spelling errors, anything that might have been potential research, either something that was uncertain or wasn't 100% clear. Because states don't always make all of the information super easy to find. So some of that requires a little bit extra digging or an extra set of eyes. And then we keep repeating the process until we get through all 51 of them, and we send it off to graphic design.
I have to toot your horn a little bit, policy department, because it really is a massive undertaking. If you think about, you know, 50 states times about 30 pages per report, as Ryan said, it's not always easy to find all of the information about how states do certain things in their election administration. It's really amazing to see how it all comes together in the end. And for our listeners, you know, there's this really amazing series of spreadsheets that they use to track all of this and, you know, help us that are on the outside of the policy department, helping with the review process, keep up with all the different things that we're doing. I'm really excited this year because of our strategic planning process, we're implementing a new project management platform. So we've been working on that over the last few weeks. And I think it's going to impact this project in particular as we move forward, because I think they're going to be able to utilize that to manage the project a lot more efficiently and effectively. So thank you, Policy Department. You have done a great job on this so far. So I happen personally to really love the new format. As someone who has been around for, you know, 4 years now, I understand the election administration side of things, but some of the clarity that you provide in the new reports has been incredible insight for me. And it's user-friendly, reader-friendly, accessible. What are some of the changes that you made to the original reports? And what are the ones that you really thought were the most impactful, the most necessary?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I know we have a lot of these details on one of the FAQ sections of the RCV Maps section of our website. So I'll just hit a couple of the big hits. But like you said, we have a new design. So taking up a notch, but there's going to be a lot more color, a lot more user-friendly. And then we also provided some new information about each of the voting system vendors' RCV capability. So there's been some changes with some of the vendors and providing some of that information there, as well as updated RCV ballot examples. So we've had some more RCV elections across the country. So there's more places we could pull from and include that, so you can see ballots that people have actually been using. Improved RCV results reporting analysis and some visual examples of how jurisdictions are reporting RCV results. We've also included voter education and recount sections have been updated with some new information. And then finally, one of the biggest additions that was a big research project was the addition of registered voter analysis. And we were including that on a jurisdiction by jurisdiction basis, both at the county and municipal level within a state. So I'll toss it over to Chris.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a couple reasons we made these updates. Like I sort of alluded to before, after the release of the first edition of this project, we did start getting some questions about like, well, you know, in this particular part where you're talking about ballot design or voter education, you know, I'm not sure I understand, you know, what you're talking about here. I want a little bit more clarity. We were hearing from election administrators, from advocates too. So we realized, I think for myself, that some of the voter education analysis, some of the ballot design analysis, some of the results reporting analysis was a little too in the weeds and a little bit sort of beside the point, to be totally honest, of what the like most effective use of this project is for most people. So we simplified a lot of that analysis. We, you know, we point people towards best practices. We provide a couple good examples of here's how ballots get designed in the real world. Here's what voter education looks like. Here's how results reporting works, because we wanted this to be useful and like action oriented. And we knew that for most people, that was the information they needed to sort of like figure things out in their own backyard. If they had to change law, like ballot design law, if they needed to consider results reporting requirements, you know, here's the things you need to understand about that structure so you can figure it out for yourself exactly what you need to do. And then we also, you know, we realized, like Ryan was saying, there have been more elections since the last edition. So there's been some innovations. There's been improvements in ballot design. There's been more types of ranked choice voting ballots designed. And so we want to make sure people can see those ballots, see what's changing, see sort of like new best practices, new best real world examples of ranked choice voting ballots. So it was all geared towards making the report itself more usable and making sure that the report reflects the best stuff that we're seeing out there in real world ranked choice voting elections. And I did want it to look prettier.
I love that because, you know, being in charge of the branding of the organization, when we have everybody on board with making things look prettier and in brand, that makes your comms department incredibly happy. So thank you, Chris, for keeping that alive. So I really want to dig a little deeper into the new voter percentage information. What are the implications of providing this information to our readers?
Yeah, so this is another thing where we got a lot of questions, because in the original version, and this analysis remains in the 2023 edition, we only looked at, you know, if a state runs elections at the county level or if a state runs elections at the city level, we were only looking at what share of counties or cities had ranked choice voting equipment when we're producing these scores, the way we categorize states within RCV maps. And that's important information because it tells you, you know, here's how many counties in your jurisdiction have equipment that they need to run ranked choice voting. And here's the counties that need to update their equipment. And like, they're sort of the thing that needs to change. Those counties do need to make those updates. But at the same time, it's really important to place those numbers in context with the actual share of voters that live in those counties, because in some instances, especially when there's a lot of smaller rural counties that might hand count their elections or that have older out-of-date equipment, they may make it seem like, oh my God, there's so much work to do in a state to get updated equipment that could run a ranked choice voting election. That might be a little misleading. And because, you know, it's actually just maybe 5% of voters. And I want to make sure those 5% of voters are treated the same as every other voter in the state. But it sort of changes how much work it seems there may be to be done to get ranked choice voting capability. And so Harriet Wasserstrom at RCV for Texas asked us this specific question, like, have you guys considered doing this voter registered voter data analysis? How would that work? And so we took that idea and ran with it and did it for every single state because we realized it does give you this really important additional like data point when you're looking at a ranked choice voting implementation of here's the counties that need to update their equipment. Here's how many voters that means. And that makes it easier to, you know, do a cost assessment. You know, if you're paying per voter for your equipment, when you know the number of voters who you're updating equipment for, that gives you a much more solid number to go with than if you're like, well, all these counties need to update it. It's just, you know, just that much more information to help you do better analysis and understand, you know, the labor necessary to get ranked choice voting equipment in a place.
Yeah, I think I'll just add that it's also helpful for elected officials who might be looking at, you know, where did they represent and, you know, how many people is it that are going to be affected by this change? And it also opens up different options available to, or at least gives you all better context to some of the options that are available to you. Because, you know, we talk about some of the other centralization methods for ballots. And if you have 25% of jurisdictions in your state that are hand counting, but it's only like 3% of ballots, then that opens up different possibilities for you. And you can make better decisions using best practices with some of that additional context.
Absolutely. I agree. And we really appreciate input from folks around the country, like Harriet, that let us know what tools are most useful to them. I love that we were able to include that in the new version. So with every great project, there come setbacks, hardships. What were the hard parts of this process? I see Chris and Ryan grinning a little bit. I know this is an audio medium, but just to describe that, they're giving me some smiles like, oh my goodness, this was something else. Tell us about the setbacks. What were they? How did you address them?
I think one of the biggest things that we face with the RCV Maps project is not only just the length of time that the project takes, but every state is different. We have a saying in the office, 50 states, 50 ways plus DC. And so it's very true when we come to work on this project. Every state is different in size. They're different in how they do things. They're different in, you know, how easy it is to access some of the materials online or to navigate, you know, their code. All of these different things we're trying to pull from. And we try and include all of our sources as well so that anybody who is reviewing these assessments, if they want to dig further into it, they can dive into it. And we try to provide all of that. But, it, you know, it's definitely time consuming. Sometimes we had to conduct interviews or reach out to some of these places to get some of this information because we want to try and provide a complete picture for that state. And also, you know, Wisconsin in particular is a challenge in and of itself when creating this report. Give a shout out to Melissa again. She, by just random chance, that's how we divvied up the states, and she got at Wisconsin, and that has quite a few jurisdictions within it. I can't remember, it was 1,848 or something like that. It's a big egg lift on that one. So we're also able to pull together as a team and pitch it where needed.
I mean, I think that is a really important one. And, you know, you mentioned the length of time the project takes, and I think it is important to highlight, like, we spend a few months just planning for the project, sort of getting all of our work into place so we have a really strong foundation to build from. And then it takes, you know, another year because we only have a couple of staff members working on this and we have other responsibilities to actually build out all these reports. And some, again, like I mentioned before, some of the changes we made to the template and the way the report works and the information we're gathering for the report was because, you know, in balancing all the work we're trying to do, we want to be able to get this report out on time and still have it remain useful for people. And so like figuring out that timing, making sure we've given ourselves enough time to do good research and review it and make sure it's really, really accurate and useful for people is so important. But because we're being really deliberate about that, that also means by the time the report is out, it's inevitable that at least one state has somewhat out of date information about the voting systems they're using. It's a constantly evolving field. It's voting systems in particular right now, a lot of them are reaching the end of their usable lifespan. Last time any sort of election jurisdictions, counties, cities, states got a ton of money for elections was 2002 and when HAVA passed. And so for places may still be using that equipment for their elections now, but that equipment is reaching the end of its usable lifespan. So the farther out we get from 2002, the more likely it is that places are going to be replacing their equipment as we're writing these reports, as we're analyzing states. I know there were a couple states where like at the beginning of the week, I had some set of data of like, here's all the equipment used in each county. And then by the end of the week, it actually like one or two counties had actually reported, we just purchased some new equipment. And so navigating that, that's always a little frustrating. It's very good to see. It's always good to see the places that are updating their equipment because it means they have, you know, state-of-the-art elections equipment that is more secure, that's more reliable, that will last them. But at the same time, it's like it's a give and take with how up-to-date our assessments can be. And so that's why we're really clear throughout. Like, we wrote this on this date. The last time this was updated was, you know, March 20th, 2023, double check our numbers. A lot of the underlying analysis, the reason the analysis is written the way it is as like a full explanation of here's what these systems can do for RCV is because we know it's possible that a state will replace older equipment, but that equipment will get replaced with something that's probably already used in that state. So, you know, if one county's using, you know, a HART scanner that can do ranked choice voting with a software upgrade, and then another county buys that to replace their old equipment, we want people to be able to look at their assessment and be like, oh, okay, so this county now slots into this column for me. This is how things would work there. So we're trying to account for that, but we also know inevitably, you know, there's going to be a few that are out of date pretty quickly. I think the other thing is the review process. I think we need to go through, we have like three stages of review, right? We write it, and then one of the other like RCV Maps team members, whoever didn't write that assessment, will review it, make sure that everything looks right to them. And then we'll send it through a review with Kelly and Sam and comms. And then we'll pass it by at least one more level of review, typically Rosemary as executive director, to be like, okay, this looks good to me. And that, you know, that is a time that can be time consuming, but it does make sure, you know, we put out the most polished product possible. And so it's a bit of a like necessary evil. I think related to what you were saying, Ryan and Kelly, like we've now got Asana. I'm very excited to have that for this project because we were reaching the limits of what like we could really ask Google Sheets to do as a project management tool. And I think it will make the whole process a little bit smoother. It's still going to take time. And I'm like, in part of me is happy about that because it means we're doing our work well and like we're being thorough and thoughtful about how we put this report out. But there's also places where I'm sure it can be a little smoother for everybody. And I'm excited to, you know, get that going next year.
Absolutely. I think you're right. And, you know, taking our time and really digging into the information only benefits those who are using our resources. And I think that's one of the great things about our staff is that's how we operate. We aim to provide the best resources that we can with the information that we have at a given time. And Ryan, I have to say, if I had a dollar for every time I said 50 states, 50 ways plus DC, and I've actually added Virgin Islands, Guam, and all the other US territories, we really would be rich. We might not need a fundraising department because I say that so much. Said it in a presentation last night, as a matter of fact. So an exciting part of this particular project is that we did actually secure funding for a professional designer to create the published reports. Tell us about that. And we actually really love her too. So Ruby, we are so grateful for all your work, but tell us about Ruby. Tell us about having these professionally finished.
Yeah. So last year we put out with Democracy Rising and Represent Us our Protect the Win report, which is an advocate's guide for ranked choice voting implementation. So if you're working on a ranked choice voting campaign, read Protect the Win so you understand, you know, after election day, here's what you need to get started doing if you want to have a successful first implementation of ranked choice voting. That was a big project also, and was like, you know, this cross-organizational effort. So we wanted to make it look really, really good when it came out into the world. And Represent Us happened to already have worked a lot with Ruby Western, and so pulled her in to design that project. And I was just like so impressed with how she pulled everything together. I thought she did like this incredible job of marrying the substance of the report with style and turning what can feel like pretty dry, wonky information into something that like first looked good and also had a mix of informational styles. It wasn't just a bunch of text on a page. We had ideas for graphics that she pulled together. She did an incredible job of turning like our basic ideas for something more visual, something a little less text heavy, into really good looking graphics. And I was like, this is exactly the sort of designer who I want to work with on RCB Maps, knowing it's in a similar position as Protect the Win. It's a relatively dense report. There's a lot of words that like need to exist, but there are better ways to present this information and reinforce this information for people with different learning styles, people with different reading habits. I like jumped when I saw her first edition of Protect the Win. I was like, okay, I want to work with her on RCB Maps. So we started that conversation because for all those reasons. And it was just exciting to, again, work with her and go back and forth with her and sort of refine the product and make it as visual as we could. And it was, I think, for me, exciting to know, like, if I have an idea for a visual, she'll be good at executing on that. She will take it and she will make it better than the idea I had. And I loved having someone I could like rely on for that in particular.
Yeah, I think honestly, it really just takes this project up to the next level. And she definitely did it way faster than any one of us on staff could have done it. And I mean, just as somebody who was working within the plain text document version of it, and then looking at the nicely designed version of it, I mean, it's night and day. It's way easier to navigate and use and look at, and it just feels easier to read, especially with some of the nice graphics and the pictures and the different colors. And it's all on brand too, which is always great.
Amen. Preach it, Ryan. We have worked really hard to make sure all of our resources are on brand. So thank you for being cognizant of that as we work on our projects like RCB Maps. So we always have a closing question. And I know I typically provide that ahead of time, but I'm changing it up a little bit from what I provided ahead of time. You all know that I love a surprise on the podcast, but it dawned on me when we were talking about Wisconsin earlier. In three words or less, describe your most challenging report that you were responsible for writing, and you have to tell us which one it is.
So thinking back to it, when we were writing these, New York was the first one that came out to me because it's the only state that technically took a step backwards because it had one county that moved to clear ballot. But like they were updating their equipment, and we know Clear Ballot's working on it for Multnomah County. And so they're going to be RCV capable. They just had a county that changed from an RCV capable vendor to Clear Ballot, which we already know is going to be. But by the time we were publishing, we couldn't add Clear Ballot as an RCV capable one. So that one also, and there was another county in New York that I had to go back and forth because they had just updated their voting equipment. But we couldn't find it anywhere online. So we had to identify what it was so we could add it correctly into their assessment.
I remember going back and forth on that a lot. The easiest one that I also did was DC because they have a single election jurisdiction. So that one was very easy. Honestly, I think the most challenging one was Massachusetts because they're in New England and a lot of New England states have a city or town driven election administration model, Maine included. And that means there's just more data points to consider. Massachusetts has 351 cities or towns, and they all essentially have their own equipment that they purchase and maintain. Whereas most states with counties, like you're going to generally top out at 100, 150 counties, and most states have far fewer counties. So there's just more data points to manage with Massachusetts. And over the course of the year, like I was talking about earlier, in general, Massachusetts has a lot of, or had a lot of older voting equipment, but they were updating it. A new city, a new town, because there's 351 of them, was like getting a new piece of equipment every week. And so if I did an analysis at the beginning of the month, but, you know, came back to it later, I would suddenly find like 10, 15 counties or cities, sorry, had updated their equipment. And that's good. I liked being up to date, but that was the challenge there. And I was grateful to Voter Choice Massachusetts, who was doing an incredible job of tracking all that data and keeping us up to date on it. That was not three words. Massachusetts, one word.
Well, I think more data points fits right in. And you said that multiple times over and over. Yeah, shout out to the RCB folks in Massachusetts. We've been doing some great work with them. And thank you, Ryan and Chris, for another great episode of RCB Clips. We are super excited to get this out to our listeners and help them learn more about what's behind RCB Maps. So thank you very much for coming today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And now for this month's final round, where we share an interesting bit of trivia, a useful tidbit, or just something we thought was cool for folks to know about ranked choice voting. Here's Lexi Michaelin with this month's final round.
RCV Maps tells us an incredible amount of information about what it might take to run RCV in each state. The exciting thing is that because it is a nationwide analysis, it can also tell us new things about how to run RCV across the United States. For example, we just finished up a new analysis of what it might cost to ensure all election hardware in the U.S. is RCV capable. Based on our analysis, it would cost around $340 million to get RCV capable hardware across the United States. This rounding error in the DoD budget makes it this month's final round.
Thank you for joining us today for our April 2024 RCV Clips episode, produced by the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center. You can find our show anywhere you listen to podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to the show for the latest episodes and updates, and take a few minutes to rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. For more information about RCVRC and Ranked Choice Voting, check out our website at rcvresources.org. The production of this podcast is supported by the generosity of our donors. Donations can be made directly on the website, and please don't hesitate to contact us with donation questions at donate@rcvresources.org. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at RCV Resources, and on Facebook and LinkedIn at Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at RCVRC. If you have a few minutes, fill out the listener survey linked in the show notes for this episode. The survey is short and will only take a few minutes of your time. We would love to hear your feedback and ideas. Thank you. Our theme music today is Flutterbee by Poddington Bear. Until next time, I'm Kelly on behalf of the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center.